Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network is proud to present Leonard Lopate at Large, lively hour-long in-depth discussions providing overviews and context to topics usually covered in partial measures. His guests include leading thinkers, scientists, artists, economists, farmers, historians, authors, and politicians. Mr. Lopate is a Peabody Award winner whose numerous honors include 3 Associated Press Awards and 3 James Beard Awards.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. Exposure to lead at an early age is known to cause severe health problems in children, including brain damage, and that's why New York City law requires that children be routinely tested to make sure their lead levels are within safe limits. This summer, the New York Times reported that, according to the city's Department of Health, between 2012 and 2016, 820 children younger than 6 who were living in public housing were found to have elevated levels of lead in their blood. It's also been reported that New York City Housing Authority buildings have been tested positive for lead and that NYCHA officials have covered this up. We have invited industrial hygienist Monona Russell back to our show to talk about all of that and to take your calls on that and other related matters or other matters. We can talk. She also is an expert on art materials, theatrical safety, Christmas decorations. We can talk about toys that might not be safe for your children. Our number here is 212-209-2877. If you want to join the discussion, 212-209-2877. And Monona, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Nice to see you.
You're the founder and president of Arts, Crafts, and Theater Safety, and you're also a safety officer at IATSE, it's called, the safety consultant for SAG-AFTRA, the unions covering film and theater employees. Haven't you been asked to look into the issue of lead paint in New York City buildings?
Well, of course, even in my union jobs, because one of the most common venues for shooting a film is an abandoned building. Mm-hmm. And so we're constantly dealing with both lead and asbestos there.
Now, if you visit a building that had lead paint, why would that be dangerous? I thought it was only dangerous if, for example, when kids eat paint chips.
Oh, boy, this is really important. That there are children who do chew on lead. That's no question. But that is not the problem. The problem is every time paint cracks, a little dust is formed. Every time a chip falls, more dust is formed. You step on a chip, more dust is formed, and now it's tracked around. It is the constant exposure to small amounts of dust in the area where there's deteriorating paint that is the real problem.
But didn't New York City ban lead paint in 1960? Are there still many buildings with lead paint 58 years ago?
No, they banned it in 1978, but I read the pre-rule, and it allowed distributors to continue to distribute any stocks of lead paint up until 1980. Mm. So the real date that you should consider is the cutoff, regardless of what the law says, is 1980.
And if you have painted over lead paint with non-lead paint, that's not enough of a protection?
Well, not when the paint cracks down to the old lead. If you keep it in very good condition and you keep painting over it and you make sure it doesn't crack. But when you look at those pictures of those poor people in NYCHA housing, you've got water damage, you've got efflorescence where the paint is starting to get spongy and crystalline, and there's a huge sources of dust.
What are some of the health problems caused by exposure to lead?
You know, it would be interesting to find one that isn't. The unusual aspects of lead is when you look at both adult and children data, that the blood lead level is predictive of mortality for many causes. It just seems to make everything a little worse. For adults, there's, you know, hypertension and kidney types of problems, even at some of the levels that they think are okay. With children, there is no level that they have found that is safe.
And are they especially vulnerable because their brains are still developing?
That's the big one, because you lose IQ points in those brain-forming days, and you do not get them back, no matter what you do. We've been studying children now since the 70s in the first big Needleman study of lead intoxication in children, and none of those people, whether they chelated them, whether they treated them, or whether they left them alone, ever got one IQ point back. Lead is one of those unforgiving toxins.
So cognitive issues are key, but also cardiovascular.
Absolutely.
Does it affect the immune system?
It seems to affect, as I said, almost every system, and it is a low-level carcinogen. So, I mean, there's just nothing that lead doesn't do in some quantity, but they usually just talk about the major effects, which are the neurological effects.
But I would imagine low levels of lead in our blood would not be dangerous. It's only when it reaches a certain point where it can have a real impact.
Every single level of lead has an impact. There is no level...
None is safe?
No level below which they cannot find physiological response. Now, some of those responses are very minor and very small, but they are there. So there's just no level of lead that you can say is safe.
Should I assume that because I have lived around the city, for example, and other parts of the world, that I have some lead in my blood?
Well, that explains it, Leonard. I was
wondering what was wrong.
Well, as children, and in my age, because I'm a really old lady, what was considered normal back then, we know is pathologically high. So many of us had deficits that were created when we were children because of the lead gasoline and all the lead paint that was still being used regularly.
In fact, we had lead in our gasoline until, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, and then we exchanged it for manganese, which is a neurotoxin. Nice going.
And is that what we have now?
Yeah.
Well.
It's very, very, you know, if you don't laugh about what's going on, there's no point because they just seem to go from one thing to another. Because what did they replace the lead in the paint with? Do you know?
No.
Titanium dioxide. Did they test it first to see if it was a problem? No, of course not. It's a lung carcinogen.
Oh, great. Because when I was a painter, of course, I used titanium white.
Yeah.
In fact, I used cadmium red. Poisoning myself?
There you go. Now we know. Now that explains your whole life.
But is that, those are all bad things for
sure.
us?
Sure, yeah. The titanium is only a danger by inhalation. At least it doesn't seem to be a problem by skin contact or ingestion. But the cadmium is toxic in all routes of entry.
Can you still get cadmium red? It was such a good color.
Oh, you can get cadmium. You can get lead. You can buy lead paint for artists that's, 60% lead.
Mostly the whites.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
White, and everybody uses white as a mixer for all different colors.
There's a big push again to be using flake white, which is lead carbonate. Good luck, guys. They're going to come out of that school with a brain like a box of rocks.
I'd imagine there's some artists listening right now who are saying, oh my, I better look at what's in my box or the jars of paint that I have. And if you are somebody who's concerned... again, the number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Isn't there also lead in children's toys, the toys that kids put in their mouths?
Well, the Consumer Product Safety Commission has never been very good at helping children, but the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act that was passed by Congress really did. It lowered the lead to one part per million, which is 0.0001%. So that's supposedly the law that controls the amount of lead in metals and paints and other things in children's toys. However, nobody's watching the store, and nobody's watching the ports, and nobody seems to be doing anything at the federal level. So the kinds of things that come in the imports, you just don't really know what you're getting.
Can we blame this on Chinese toy makers as we seem to, this White House seems to be blaming everything else on China?
Well, no, you can point at just about any other country. Mm. It's just, and you've got people in all countries trying to save money and to use the old stuff. So, I mean, China's a big source, but so is India, Bangladesh. even Italy sometimes.
We have a call coming in, so should we take it? Hello, you're on the air, and you're talking to Monona Russell.
Oh, hi. Yes, thank you, Ms. Russell. I was wondering, I heard an interesting and disturbing report a few years ago, and there was never any follow-up. You know, sometimes you hear a news report, and it's like a mystery, and you never hear anything else about it, so I don't know if the mystery was ever solved. And as I remember it, it was about public housing, and there was a study done that found higher, and they controlled for every possible variable, and they found that in people who lived in public housing had higher rates of diabetes than people who didn't. People, you know, in the exact same socioeconomic group, and everything was the same, except that people lived in public housing, and the control group did not, and they had higher rates of diabetes. And I just wondered, was anything ever found out about this? Has anybody ever figured out why that is? It was about 3 or 4 years ago, and they said it was quite a mystery. They had no idea why that was. And I'll listen on the radio if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling us.
Yeah, there's still no idea. Uh-huh. It's an odd anomaly. And no one really knows why. There were theories about, you know, income, and those didn't pan out to be.
Well, as she pointed out, people of similar income who aren't in public housing.
It really is a mystery.
Now, once lead has been absorbed by the body, is it excreted as some other toxins are, or does it remain with us forever?
A small amount is excreted. Some of it is deposited in your bones, where it continues to recirculate, because, you know, your bones are not static. They are always kicking off calcium into your bloodstream and then reabsorbing it, and they do the same exact thing with the lead. So lead has what is called in toxicology a 25-year half-life.
Oof.
So the dose you get today, 25 years from now, you've managed to eliminate half of that dose. So what it means is it easily builds up over time in the body.
And are there treatments to remove lead from the blood? You mentioned chelation therapy.
Oh, boy, you want to run like hell if anyone suggests that. And get yourself to either a doctor who is board certified in occupational medicine or toxicology. That is not a decision that is made by any other doctor. Because you can really hurt yourself. The chelation takes the lead out of the bone, but it puts it back in the bloodstream, where it has another shot at your nervous system, your brain, your kidneys on the way out, and then most of it ends up being reabsorbed anyway. It's a really bad idea. It is only done in extremis. And the most frightening thing are these people who will tell you they can take all the bad stuff out of your body and cleanse this and detox that. Oh, run like hell, because the last thing you want is to throw all that stuff back into your bloodstream to float around and do more damage.
And there's no other way that the chelation takes that stuff out of your body? It just puts it into the bloodstream?
Yeah, and so that gives the body a chance to start to try to break it down, but it's more dangerous than not, unless you are at a really high poisoning level. And don't make that decision on your own either. If you have high lead, you want to be talking to somebody who's an expert in that.
I'm speaking with industrial hygienist Monona Russell, R-O-S-S-O-L, and we are taking your calls at 212-209-2877. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI. Hello, you're there. I hear you rustling, and there's a slight delay.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hello. Can you tell us how we chelate or remove this lead from our bodies? Is it through EDTA therapy?
Well, that's what I was just talking about. You don't do that. You don't do that unless you are at very, very, very high levels, and in that case, you want to be under the care of a doctor who is board certified in occupational medicine or toxicology. You don't want any general practitioner. You don't want any environmental doctor. You want somebody who's a specialist in that.
Thank you so much for your call. We are going to take Let's take another call. Hi, you're on WBAI.
Hello, Lenny. How are you?
Okay, and what about you?
Welcome back to BAI.
Uh-huh. Good to be back, and good to be doing this show. But you have a question for Monona?
Yeah. Pack your bags, go to Cuba.
Okay. Well.
Well, he gets a little too much lead in his life.
Is there a law that requires children to have their blood tested for lead every year?
Not every year, but there's pediatric tests that are required when a child is born. They even do cord blood lead levels now on a lot of children because those are the times they really want to get a look at the amount of lead. And then between between a year and 6 months and a year, and 6 months and 6 years, they also want a test.
Well, who conducts those tests, the Department of Health or a private physician doing a routine examination?
Well, the pediatrician orders the test.
Should adults also be tested for lead as part of their physicals?
You know,
because I've never had a doctor suggest it.
That is something that I would really like to suggest for people living in NYCHA housing. I think they should know what their blood lead levels are. And they should be comparing them with various national averages.
Well, 400,000 people or so live in NYCHA housing, and a third of them are children. Until recently, it was thought there wasn't a lead problem in those buildings because the apartments are always painted with lead-free paint.
Yeah, the thing is, they should have been testing the dust. They should have been doing what are called wipe samples routinely. And checking that out. Because if you've got, there were 77-some children in one building that had high lead. If you've got children with lead levels that are above normal, you've got a lead problem in the building. Done. Over. Now, just find out where it is.
Now, HUD Secretary Ben Carson came to New York to check out the lead problem in NYCHA housing, and he met with Mayor de Blasio. But hasn't the federal government been in the process of relaxing regulations on things like lead?
Do we have a federal government? I'm not sure. It's just that all enforcement of all the agencies right now is so confused and so relaxed.
So if the federal government took over NYCHA housing from the city?
I'd be worried. You know, I really think that a really educated population that knows what their lead levels should be and gets a blood lead every couple of years, at least with their regular physical, you have to ask for it because it's not a standard test for a routine physical, would be a really good way to go because adults will also have hypertension and kidney issues and a number of things from lead levels.
What about people who own their own homes, homes that were built in the 19th century, for example? Should they be concerned?
Absolutely. You should know what the paint contains. You should know.
Well, would the paint in the original painting 150 years ago or 100 years ago or 75 years ago have likely been lead paint? When did we start using lead paint?
Especially if it is good housing, if it was high class. I happened to live in a building that was a tenement from day one. And when I wanted to renovate my apartment, literally take it down to the studs, I tested every bit of paint in it and there was no lead. And the reason is they use the cheap paint. I lucked
out. Lucky you.
I lucked out. But usually if it was good housing, the good paint was the lead paint.
Because it made the colors look better?
Oh, it was just buttery and smooth, and it really worked well, and it lasted longer. And of course, no bugs would eat it. Nobody, it killed anything that came near it. So, I mean, it was really good.
Including you.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a disagreement with regards to the artist pigments. I've always heard that the any toxic effect from them is from bad practice and usage, and that if someone doesn't ingest them or deliberately, you know, have them on their skin, is basically, you know, I've never heard of anyone having a problem poisoning themselves with, you know,
Before you answer, Monona, I used to be a painter. I can't imagine a time when paint wasn't on my skin. And there are people who, for one reason or another, put the brush on their tongue every so often.
Yeah, but here's the big problem. Have you ever looked down at the floor of a studio in an art school? What do you see? There's paint all over the floor. What happens when you walk on paint? You wear it down. What happens when you wear the paint down? You're creating dust. You're walking that cadmium, lead, all those things off, all over the building. You can't pass a wipe sample anywhere in the standard art building. So there is dust and there is contamination. And where do you eat your lunch? And can you pry that bottle of water out of somebody's hands when they're standing at the easel? I doubt it. So there are so many ways that artists end up hurting themselves. And then, of course, they sneak into the stairwells to spray the paint. I mean, just watch the practice of artists, and you will despair at how any of them survive.
You want to respond to that? He's gone. Okay, he's gone. Let's take another call. Our number, by the way, again, is 212-209-2877. Hi, you're on the air. Speak to Monona Russell.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Hi, my name is Gina. I'm in Manhattan. I grew up in a housing project. Just wanted to know, like, where do you go to get lead testing if you suspect that you may have been exposed? And could it be in the bottle of drinking water as well?
Oh, yes, there's other sources. In fact, many New York apartments would flunk an EPA lead test for their water because some of it comes through a lot of lead pipes. So you have other sources of lead besides the paint. And if you got cheap china, you know, that you may be leaching lead into your food. There's just so many ways in which you could be getting additional lead.
Wait. You said cheap china. In other words,
china leaching
lead was used in making ceramics.
Yeah, low fire ceramicware is made with lead glazes that very often leach lead into the. I got a call from a TV studio in L.A., and they had just taken 6 different white dishes to a laboratory, and 4 of them flunked the FDA leach test. And I said, well, I'm not surprised at all, because nobody's watching the store. So, you know, there's many sources of lead. But the point is, you're the recipient, and so it probably behooves us to find out what that lead level is. And all you have to do is ask your regular doctor during your yearly physical, I want a blood lead test. Can you order it for me? And he should be able to do that. And that goes to a standard lab. And you get a number. You want, tell them you just really want the real standard blood lead level tests where you got numbers.
And then what happens if she finds out that it's elevated?
Then she wants to look for those sources. Maybe she wants to put a
filter. Because they might be in her house today.
It might be in her house today.
Does that help? She's no longer there? Oh, too bad. Okay, well, let's go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Winona, Joel Kupferman.
Oh, my goodness. How are you, Joel?
Okay. Thank you for being there. And you got the best industrial hygienist east of the Mississippi.
Well, who's the one west of the Mississippi?
Yeah.
Because we might want to have that person on our show.
We're still looking for that person. Winona and I go back a long ways, especially of 9/11 issues. But just getting back to NYCHA, I represent the tenants at Smith Houses in Lower Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
$56 million rebuild from Hurricane Sandy, and the rebuild construction is tearing open the soils that are there. They've been trenching and the like, and not only we've been finding high levels of lead, but we're finding astronomical levels of arsenic, and other chemicals.
VOCs, you bet. Yeah, you sent me some of that data, so I remember reviewing it, yes.
I think we might want to discuss the exposure of people of lead in the soils that are being excavated, you know, at all the construction sites out there, and they're not being covered up.
Yeah, the dust from that is going to add to people's lead and other metals. And if you grow vegetables on it, look out, because some of the types of vegetables will concentrate those metals into their food products. So it's just, we're living in a very polluted city.
And you mentioned 9/11. Did 9/11 free up a lot of lead into the atmosphere and the environment?
Well, some lead, but You took 5 acres of building and reduced it to ash. So what? You got all of the plastics and all of the metals and all everything just all put together there. So you have this huge soup of chemicals that were added there, and that dust is a layer in our soil as well.
Joel, should we expect to see some lawsuits?
Possibly. We're also trying to get. What's also upsetting is that we try to get the health department involved. And at first they told us that NYCHA residents are not covered by the health department, which is false. NYCHA residents should be covered by all the city agencies, and we should speak to the mayor about that. But more importantly is that the arsenic possibly came from rat poison control programs, and that was administered by the health department. So, and we found 85 parts per million of arsenic next to a daycare center where the children are playing. And we've yet to get city agencies to come do more testing. So, but also I just want to point out that it's not just the lead that's the killer, it's particulate matter. I think study after study has shown that, right, Winona, that particulates,
right.
Especially the smaller ones, are the killer, even without the lead and everything else that's in it. And so that's one of the major concerns that we should figure out how to suppress.
Yeah, we have to watch the particulate in the air, especially the 2.5 and under, the real tiny ones.
So haven't some tenants, NYCHA tenants, tenant groups as well, sued NYCHA over the lead paint issue?
It's in federal court right now, and the city and NYCHA and the Justice Department came up with a stipulation of some settlement, and the judge rejected it for not being strong enough.
What is NYCHA's defense?
They keep on saying they don't have enough money, but they've been found that money isn't the only problem, that they actually wrote a guidebook to their staff of how to avoid inspections, how to put in equipment that makes noise to act as a compressor or as an air filter or whatever. So they've been more than disingenuous in their reporting and their enforcement.
Wow.
And what's upsetting, I just got to say, what's upsetting about Smith right now, that this is federal money. This is coming from FEMA going through the state. And it's actually contract violations. It's easy for the city and the state and the mayor to clamp down on these people, and they're not. So, and this is one site where it's a vociferous tenants president, and we're concerned about all the other NYCHA housing units. And not only that, it's the loss of the trees that's happening. So we're losing a lot of natural resources at NYCHA.
Have you heard about what the conversation between Ben Carson and Mayor de Blasio might have been like?
Indirectly, but in some ways it's a mixed bag that the feds aren't stepping in. But there's a lot of people chomping at the bit to get a hold of NYCHA's property, and to privatize it and to build buildings in the middle of all these sites, which is definitely going to affect people's environmental health. We stopped the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project and the Urban Justice Center stopped them from building infill a while back. It would have been luxury buildings in the middle. And if they do that, it's going to take away a lot of their resources, including increasing the heat. And I think it's important to point out that one of the major environmental effects of climate change has been heat on people. And by allowing new building without all that protections, you're also going to have an increased heat problem.
Yeah. You're talking to one of the most active lawyers in the city on these very issues. So it's a good adjunct to what we're talking about. Also, I was interested to see that the health department is backed down again and again and again whenever NYCHA questioned any of their tests by saying, well, I guess maybe we were wrong or it was a false positive. That's a ridiculous answer.
And it doesn't matter who the mayor was?
Yeah, it doesn't really.
Because we've had Democrats and Republicans in City Hall.
Yeah, because a lead test is a really simple test. Mm-hmm. I mean, you dissolve everything, you digest it, and you run it. There is no reason to think that you're going to get on a standard lead test false positives routinely as some kind of problem. So I don't understand why the health department has been, playing chicken all of this time either.
And we are taking your on-air calls at 212-209-2877. Let's put another caller on. Hi, you're on WBAI.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
All right. I'm grateful to be on the Lennon Lopate Show. My first time calling.
Oops, we have a bad connection here.
Oh, how's that? Is that better?
That's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay, I said I'm grateful to call into your show. I have two questions, and then I'll take it off the air. I'm outside, so maybe there's a little background noise.
Okay.
One question is, I heard years back, a friend told me about that you can buy swabs that test and then change color to check for lead and other metals. So how reliable is that, if any? And then the other question I have, can you talk a little bit about Pyrex, Corningware, and glass cookware? Is it lead-free? Is it really lead-free and all that? I'll take my answer off the air. And thanks for both of your works.
And thank you for your thoughtful questions.
Yes, they're very good. Very good questions. Yeah, those are very interesting little quick tests. As a professional, I very often do use those kits for a quick check before I send a sample in to get an actual laboratory test, because they're not perfect. They're certainly nothing you would take into court, and they do have some false negatives in particular, a few positive, but mostly they're false negatives. So you wouldn't say, well, it didn't test with the stick, so it's not lead. But if it tests strongly with it, then you could be pretty certain you really do have some lead there. So they're very useful. They're not an answer. They're just one of a series of answers. With the Pyrex, if it's real Pyrex, there's no lead involved at all. It's very high temperature fluorine type of glass. It's a really good product, I have to tell you. Almost nothing leaches out of it. But that changed a number of years ago. And a number of other products are on the market now, and we're not as sure about some of these new ones. The old original Pyrex was really top-notch. But some of these new ones we're not sure about, and it might not be lead. Some of them we think that might leach barium or other substances into food. There's no tests that are mandated for it, unfortunately. The only FDA tests are for lead and cadmium. But other things can leach out of ceramics, as you can see. So that was a very, very thoughtful question, and not a really good answer to it yet.
And that leads me to another area, because I just recently read an article that says we have a lot of plastic in our bodies these days, not just from using plastic things. We cook in plastic in many cases. We use plastic utensils. We drink water from plastic bottles. But also, fish are eating plastic in the oceans. And if we eat fish, there's a good possibility, and I love fish, there's a good possibility that I'm also eating plastic. Is plastic bad for me?
We don't really know what we're looking at are these little micro-sized bits of plastic, because the plastic is in the oceans is being rubbed and swirled by the currents and so on. And so almost every sea animal now is just full of it. So we are definitely ingesting plastic bits.
It's killing some sea life.
Well, the acute deaths are usually from plastic bags and big things like that. But we are not really sure what all this other stuff is going to do. It certainly was not intended to be there. It's not doing any good, we know. So this is probably going to be a problem that we're going to be finding out more about. The worst thing, it seems to me, is if we start getting nanoparticle sizes of plastics, because those can go cell to cell. And those can be really interfering. We now know that nanoparticles inhaled can go through the alveoli hole into the bloodstream and serve as foci for clot formation. So we're beginning to learn some very strange things about the nanoparticles. And if there's nanoparticles of plastic, that could be a really big problem in the future. But we're going to be the lab rats in this big experiment.
I think we're living an experiment right now.
Absolutely.
In chemistry that no previous century ever. I mean, there were problems, I'm sure, in the past as well, probably arsenic in food and things like that. But right now, because of new technologies, we have no idea what
we have
we're
no
doing
idea
ourselves.
Where we're going. We really don't. It's just.
Let's take another call. Hi, BAI, you're on the air.
Afternoon, Leonard. Good to hear your voice. I'm an artist, and I was wondering about if you could talk a little bit about turpentine substitutes like Gamsol and terpenoid.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to hang up.
Okay.
And by the way, wasn't benzene once considered a carcinogen?
Oh, it is carcinogen. It is. And we did use
people
it.
People
use
benzene?
Well,
I used to wash my brushes.
Oh, absolutely.
Benzene.
It was a great solvent. But it's a skin absorber, and it causes leukemia, and really nasty. So it isn't in
It's good that I quit painting.
Yeah, and so we switched to the petroleum distillates. The word terpenoid literally was just coined by one particular company, but it's been used since, and it just means it isn't turpentine, and it can be almost anything. Terpenoid natural is likely to be pine oil or citrus oil or one of the really toxic natural salts.
Oh, they're toxic as well?
Oh, my gosh. They're even worse than turpentine. You really want to stay away from those. But the terpenoid, most of them are petroleum distillates. Gamsol happens to be a petroleum distillate with just the right mixture of molecular weight, so it has excellent evaporation qualities and so on. So if I'm designing a building and I can get agreement from the artist to be using Gamsol, I can use less dilution ventilation to provide the same amount of safety in the art room than if they are going to be using any other ordinary distillate. If they're going to use turpentine, they can't afford to do it because that requires almost building a wind tunnel in order to keep up with those emissions from turpentine. Turpentine, I don't know if this makes sense because some people don't know what a threshold limit value is. Actually, you should know because if you're in an artist and in school, they should be training you to be able to read the safety data sheets on the products. And if they did, there would be these TLVs, these threshold limit values. For the petroleum distillate, it's about 100 parts per million. For the turpentine, it's 20. So you need a great deal more air in order to dilute the lower TLV product to a safe level than you do the higher TLV product. So it's really just a matter of learning the numbers and seeing what the issues are. People like to bandy terms around and talk about this being good and that being bad, but really it's all just right there. It's all fact. It's all numbers. We can just literally sit down and show you why the turpentine is something you don't want to be using.
So what should you clean your brushes with?
Gamsol is a pretty good one.
That's if you're using oils. Acrylics, are acrylics safer?
Safer.
They do. You clean them with water. But then again, if you live in Flint, Michigan.
Well, the same pigments are in both. So, you know, you don't get any free lunch on the pigments. The
cadmium red is cadmium red.
Cadmium red is cadmium red. The acrylics have a small amount of ammonia and formaldehyde, but it's really very small. So you're much safer with that. But you still have the same waste problems. You still have to collect that waste. You still have issues with the pigments, but not with the solvents. But there are ways of oil painting that don't require solvents at all. You can clean your brushes with soap and water.
Really?
You certainly can.
Now you tell me.
A little oil, a little soap and water, you just do not need solvents.
Let's take another call. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, great. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Great to be on. In respect to residential paint, I recently went through a situation about 10 months ago. We rented a house, and after we signed the lease, I get this call a day or two later from the realtor saying, oh, we forgot to have you sign this disclosure, lead paint, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into, so I tried to get out of it, but they wouldn't let me at that point. So,
they have to. You needed a lawyer.
Yeah, I tried. But so anyway, we've been here, and what they did for us, I went in the house and I tested the window sills for the lead paint, and it tested positive, and there was chipping and flaking. So they did, in fact, change the windows, which I was shocked they did. So
you had them by the short hairs, and you didn't know it. That's the real issue. They can't. They sold you a house without disclosure first, and you needed a lawyer. They you could have gotten the whole bloody thing abated.
I wish I would have talked to you then. But it brings us to today, and I'm having my first child in a month, and now I'm curious if there's lead paint under the surface of the freshly painted walls in the house. There doesn't seem to be dusting or flaking anywhere else, but is there any concern if there's something underlying coat?
You know, you had the Ubels on yesterday. You probably should get a lead inspection and have somebody do some lead wipes and some checking. Because there are issues there that you want to solve.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck. I was wondering now with all the Christmas decorations that people are putting up, whether they can be dangerous.
Well, here again, if they're made in the United States and to the right kinds of standards, there shouldn't be a problem. But sometimes, but look at how many of them are made and imported, and in really bad, you know, condition. And
I never know. Does it have to say "made in such and such a place"?
It's supposed to. Yeah, it's supposed to identify the country that's made in.
Let's take another call. No, there are no more calls. Okay. Well, so. What are some of the other areas? I mentioned Flint, Michigan, and we talked about lead pipes in New York. How safe is our water here?
Well, that's been one of the myths that we have such wonderful water here. The fact of the matter is that we ran into big trouble even 20 years ago with lead, and we were forced to add a phosphorus-containing chemical to our water to change the pH to stop leaching so much lead into the water from our pipes. That has worked okay, but if to this point, but we're on the edge again because so much of our water goes through old lead pipes, and that is not complete protection. And
what about water filters like Brita or the things that people put
Brita
on their faucets?
Brita is not really aimed at lead. It will get about 16%, but there are other filters. You need to look at the what we call in-out data, how much lead they will take out of your water, and pick the one that is good for lead.
Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
We're okay. You have a
fine,
question?
But yes, I hate to ask this question because, especially since that last question was so good. But what I was thinking is, I don't mind, I want to get to WBAI. But what I would like to do is ask you, when you go off there, where do you get your theme music from? I'm so sorry about that.
My theme music on my show?
Yes.
It was given to us by Charlie Morrow, who's a wonderful composer. And he put together a number of recording sessions with some of the greatest jazz musicians around. My opening theme starts off with a solo by Buster Williams, a pretty great bass player.
Oh my! If you could put that together, you could get you can get people to pay the WBI just for your theme.
Hey, Mal, you know, so that's good. A good idea. I'm going to ask Charlie for the future whether we can offer some of these this music as a premium. But thank you so much for your call.
I'm so sorry for your guest, but I just want to ask that question.
I think that's a really interesting suggestion. Do we have any more calls? Or is that we have one more call coming in?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. BAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Is this the program about the lead issue?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Can I go ahead and ask?
Yeah. Go right now. Manona's here.
Okay, thank you. I know the issue with lead is a big problem, and because I'm aware of it, I'm also partly involved with it, too. But the question was that I have is with the food part, because these days when you buy things like spices, sometimes shakes, powders to make shakes and stuff like that. You see the warning that these products contain something that could cause this cancer. Sometimes it's lead, and it says Proposition 65, which I think your guest has discussed in the past. How can they be selling us things that have lead in it when any amount of lead is not safe? We hang up and listen.
Okay, thank you for your call.
Yeah, what he's referring to is the Proposition 65 warning, which is a California warning. But that may not be lead that is causing them to say that. There are so many other carcinogens in the world that when they say it is it contains something that is known to the state of California to cause cancer, that could be one of a number of different chemicals. So you have to really look at the ingredient list and then see if Proposition 65 will identify enough about the reason that the warning is there.
I'm always amused by the commercials for various drugs where the side effects are listed. may cause cancer, may cause you to have suicidal thoughts. Yeah.
Well, the ones
but
about-
buy it now.
The real fact of the matter is that most of the medicines you take have never been tested for whether they can cause cancer or not. Mm-hmm. That's the real surprising thing. A medication that I took for 20 years was finally tested and found to be a carcinogen.
Oh, lucky you. But it looks like you've escaped it so far.
Oh, I'm too evil. It bounces off.
Before we end this conversation, we should mention that as a child, you were a vaudeville performer in your parents' act?
Yeah, my parents were vaudeville. My parents, you know, were working in the Orpheum Circuit, Keith Circuit and stuff way back when. But we were from the Midwest. We booked out of Chicago. And in the Midwest, vaudeville continued a lot longer than here in New York. So
after we lost the Palace, we pretty much lost vaudeville.
Yeah. So
in New York.
1932, the Palace converted to all movies. But
there was vaudeville in at the Palace into the 60s. But
yeah, there were a few.
My parents used to take me.
Yeah. So we certainly in the 50s and 60s were still doing vaudeville. So I had a union card when I was 3 years old. And
what did you do in your parents' act?
My father was a rather well-known magician. So I was an magician's assistant, an acrobat. I sang. I did record pantomime, stooge, whatever. You know, back then you did a lot of stuff. So, you know, I wrote a show about some of the stuff that happened back then. And also looked at some of the American composers in the American Songbook that were born in that period that my parents were born in. I looked at 1885 to 1910 as a birth time for various composers, and then looked at the symbolism in their music.
So this is a show that you perform in?
I wrote it, and I performed it, did it at Feinstein's. People really liked it, and Feinstein is going to bring me back.
That it was called Brunch with Monona, an afternoon of music and education.
Yes.
So you're educating even when you're doing a
you
show.
Betcha.
They come you can't in, help yourself.
They come in, there's a PowerPoint, and the first slide says Vaudeville 101. There will be a test.
Uh-huh. So Feinstein's going to bring you back in the spring?
Well, we can come any time, but we think March will be, you know, because we're really kind of busy right now.
Mm-hmm. You're busy because this is a bad time for health issues in the area that
you work
in?
There's just a lot of work right now in colleges, universities, building planning. There's so much happening in safety right now.
And you work for unions. Are unions at the forefront of the fight to keep places safe?
Yeah, if they protect their workers, that's the issue that I'm interested in.
Because one of the unions you represent, I'm a member of, SAG-AFTRA. And,
they do a wonderful job, yeah.
Are they protecting me here at WBAI?
If you call their rep. I've got his number in my phone.
You've also written several books, including The Artist's Complete Health and Safety Guide and Pick Your Poison, How Our Mad Dash to Chemical Utopia is Making Lab Rats of Us All. Do those now need updating because of all the new stuff we're learning?
Absolutely. The fourth edition of the Artist's Complete Health and Safety Guide was supposed to come out in December, but it looks like it's going to be January, February, something like that. It's a big book.
Uh-huh.
It's really much bigger than it was before, so there's a lot of work to be done.
You're going to scare me?
Why not?
Well, did we hang up on the last caller?
No.
Okay.
No.
We don't have any more callers? No. Okay. Well, we thank all of the people who did call in. Monona, I'm looking forward to the next time you come here. There are so many dangers out there. There's lots to talk about.
There certainly is.
What else? What's on your mind these days, other than lead and the dangerous pigments that artists use?
I guess just making what I would really like to have happen, and I've talked about it several times, is to get this business back into the schools where we actually do the training for hazard communication so that students graduate understanding some of the basics. Because when we listen to the callers and when we look at the level at which they're asking questions, that should be higher. That should be higher because the schools should already be talking about reading safety data sheets and lead levels and what they mean. They should know that, you know, the average person walking around should be at about 1.5 micrograms per deciliter in their blood.
Is it different for men and women?
Yes. Men are messier. They have more lead. They just do.
We can carry more lead than women
can?
Well,
you can't. You think you can. but you're evidently messier as children, and you just seem to get a little higher lead level.
I'm not surprised. Manona, thank you so much. I hope you come back soon to our show.
Anytime.
And that brings us to the end of our show. My great thanks to Manona Russell, to Barbara Kahn, who produced this segment, to Reggie Johnson, who was at the audio controls, to Charlie Morrow, who composed our theme music, and to my producer, Jesse Lent, who helps make things run smoothly. Leonard Lopate at Large comes to you on Saturdays at 4 and Tuesdays at noon. You can subscribe to Leonard Lopate at Large podcast on iTunes and by clicking on Robin Hood Radio's archive program site, which is robinhoodradio.com. You can also check out Leonard Lopate at Large Facebook page. We hope to see you next week.